little more nervous about preparing this sermon than other sermons. You know, I always try to set expectations low so you can exceed them. So I'm kind of wishing we'd titled this like Pretty Good or something. Because then I could have exceeded that. But with Epic, the bar is set pretty high. So we'll see how we do. As we've said, we're spending this time as a church trying to understand the whole story of the Bible. So to get us into that mindset, we're going to spend some time this morning talking about stories. Earlier this spring, my wife and I took our family to the happiest place on earth, Disneyland. Now, I used to go to Disney World as a child, and for me, there was always one ride that just wrapped up all of Disney for me. It's a Small World. That's what I associate with Disney World. And so after we got to the hotel, the first morning we were there, I woke up all my kids with that great song that I will do you the mercy of not singing. It's a Small World After All. It was ringing in our ears, and we had a quick breakfast and rushed to the park and got in line. And as soon as the gates were opened, that was the first ride that we went on. And it was the same interesting combination of magic and annoyance that I remembered as a child. But nonetheless, it was a great experience. And I noticed something this time on that ride that I hadn't noticed as a kid. I noticed that this ride tells a story. If you remember the ride, you start off and you see all of these dolls of children dressed in their specific ethnic clothes, singing this song in different rooms. And so you go to the European room and you have the Swedes and the yodelers. And then you make a pass there and you get to the Asian room and you have Chinese pavilions and you have Japanese shrines and Korean drums. And then you go to the Latin American room. And then you go to the North American room and the African room. The beginning of this story is of kids separated by their culture, by their language, by their dress. All of them in different rooms. But when you get to the last room, it's a very different thing. When you get to the final room of this ride, everything's in white. There's clouds in the sky. There's white streamers. And all the kids, the same mix of ethnicities and cultures, are there, but they're there together, dressed in white, singing the same song in harmony. Of course, they're singing in English, which is an interesting thing to acknowledge. So this ride tells a story about cultures that are separated by their differences, but in the end have managed to overcome. They've managed to come together in harmony and unity. The question then is, how did they do that? How did they get there? And the song they're singing gives us the answer. Listen to the words. It's a world of laughter, a world of tears. It's a world of hopes and a world of fears. There's so much that we share that it's time we're aware. It's a small world after all. Now, this ride debuted in 1964 at the World's Fair, shortly after the Cuban Missile Crisis, to a world that was reeling from the effects of two world wars and trying to figure out, how are we going to live together in peace? And this ride offered a story that gave a simple solution. You just have to learn this really annoying song, and everything will be fine. You just have to realize that we're all the same. There's so much that we share. It's a small world. That's all we need to get from divided to united. Now, the truth is that this story has had a tremendous impact on our culture. I would say that this is actually the dominant story of how we might go about living in a multicultural society. It affects our politics. It affects our families. You see it in education. You see it in religion. You see it in entertainment. This story that all we have to do is realize that we're all ultimately the same is a powerful one that our culture tells over and over again. It's because stories change how we live. Stories give us shape to the decisions we make. And the truth is that all of us live with big stories in our backgrounds, stories that affect our relationships, our decisions, our hopes, our expectations. It's a small world tells a story that affects every one of those things. Some people live with a story of the American dream in their background. If I just work hard enough, I can succeed. And that guides them in everything. Some people live with a story of a good education in their background. If I just get educated, if I just educate my children, then education will solve my problems. Education will make me happy. A lot of people live with negative stories behind their lives. The story of the victim, where I try and I try, but everybody's against me and nothing ever goes right. Other people live with a story of failures that haunt my life. I've made bad choices and I'm doomed to live a life paying the consequences of those things that I've done. These stories permeate all of our lives. They affect everything we do, everything we say, every decision we make. The question then for us this morning is, if there are big stories in our backgrounds, if there are these narratives that affect us, the question we have to ask is, are you living by the right story? Is the story in your background capable of guiding you? Will it actually help you get where you want to go? And most importantly, is it true? Is the story that you're living by the true story? For the next 9 months at PBC, we are embarking on this journey with one simple goal: to understand the big story of the Bible. You're probably aware that the Bible contains lots of stories, but sometimes we don't realize that the Bible itself is one long story with a beginning and an end and parts that connect and tie together. For me personally, that's one of the most amazing things about this book, that over thousands of years and dozens of authors, this book tells one coherent story. And it's regarded even by unbelievers as one of the most powerful works of literature in existence. So our goal is to get our minds around that big story. But it's not our only goal. We want to understand that story so that we can figure out how our little stories can play out in the context of that big story. How does that big story change the way we live, the decisions we make, the choices that we choose? So we're going to be asking two questions over the next 9 months, and they're basically the same two questions that we're always asking around here. What is the Bible all about, and how does it change my life? That's our goal as we move through this epic series. It's a great tragedy to live your life and then to come to realize that you followed the wrong story. That maybe if you work hard, you still might not succeed. That maybe education won't get you everything you want. That maybe you were so consumed with the fact that everybody was against you that you couldn't see the people that were on your side. We don't want to live by false stories. We want to live by the true story. So this morning, as we kick off this series, my goal is to convince us that this story that the Bible presents is a compelling one. That it just might be the kind of story we need, the kind of story that we want to wrap our lives around. Whether you've been a Christian for a long time or you're just opening the Bible for the first time, each of us needs to wrap our lives around the true story more and more. My hope this morning is that we would be convinced of that. So how do you tell if a story is worth listening to? You start it, right? You read the first page, see how it sounds. So that's what we're going to do this morning. We're going to look at the first verse of the first chapter of the first book of the Bible. It's seven simple words in Hebrew, a few more in English. But my hope is that these seven words will convince us that this story really is epic. Well, the first words of the Bible are what the first words of any grand story ought to be. One word in Hebrew, three words in English, but I think we'll come to see that these words make a powerful claim. In the beginning. Now, beginnings are important. The Hebrew word for beginning always describes something special, the first sun, the first batch of produce from a harvest, the first season of a king's reign. Sometimes it's used to describe the source of things, and so you have a proverb that claims, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." Beginnings are important. Facebook recently introduced a new design to their pages called Timeline. And if you're on Facebook, you've heard a lot of opinions about Timeline. But basically, it's a chronological listing of your life. And if you keep hitting that down arrow, down, 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 if you keep going all the way to the bottom, at the bottom of every page is a little picture of a baby and the word born. Now, they didn't have to ask you whether you needed that part, because every single person on Facebook was born. Every single person here was born. We all began somewhere. And the circumstances of our birth and our early years continue to affect us today. Beginnings are important. Here's the incredible thing about the Bible. The Bible claims to tell the story about the beginning. Now, all stories begin at their beginning, but this story begins at the beginning. There wasn't anything before this beginning. This is the beginning of all things. And the Bible has the audacity to say that its story starts where all stories start. Now, the Bible isn't the only one to claim this. For centuries, different cultures have had their versions of stories of the beginning. The Babylonians believed that their god Marduk defeated a sea monster, split the carcass in two, and out of that carcass sprang forth heaven and earth. The Greeks believed that they had a god named Chaos that had two children, Night and Death, and then somehow mysteriously love was born as well. One Roman story is kind of like a bakery story. They believe that their god rolled up everything into a big ball and then started separating out opposites. So people have always had competing stories to choose from, competing beginnings to base their life around, until now. Because almost a century ago, our culture started waging a war on the idea that the story we're starting today is the right story. They started to say that this Bible claims to tell the story from the beginning, but it's false, that it doesn't really describe the beginning of things. The problem is, the story that they presented as an alternative had no beginning. There was no start to it. It just was and kept changing. Just recently, there's been a YouTube video gone viral from Bill Nye, the Science Guy. And the title of his video is "Creationism is Not Appropriate for Children." He claims that it's a ridiculous notion and that in a few centuries it'll be gone because it's so hard to understand. This battle still rages today. And the problem is the debate has gone all wrong. People have been caught up in arguing about the method of creation, about how it all began, when in fact the most important words of these early chapters are about who began it all. It's not about the methods, it's not about the how, it's about the who. It's about claiming that there was a beginning and that there was someone there who began it all. Now, how it all began is still an interesting topic. It's still worth thinking about and thinking about well. So because it's important, we're going to have a theology roundtable in a couple of weeks to deal with that. On September 23rd, we'll talk about the issues of how it all began and talk about some of those theories. But the most important claim the Bible makes is that God began it, that there is a beginning and it's possible to speak about it. The tragedy of the past century is not that most people believe in evolution. The tragedy is that most people believe that no one began it. And that is a problem, because stories without beginnings aren't stories. You can't have a story if it never starts. The result is that we live in a culture that has rejected any notion of an intelligible beginning, and because of that, they've rejected any notion of a story that might guide us. I think for the first time in history, our culture has a story without a beginning. And when that happens, all meaning is lost. You drift around, you float, you're not rooted anywhere. You don't know where to go or where you've been. Listen to this quote from a book called Trainspotting, which was later turned into a movie. "We realize that we're all going to die without really finding out the big answers. We develop all these long-winded ideas which just interpret the reality of our lives in different ways, without really extending our body of worthwhile knowledge about the big things, the real things. Basically, we live a short, disappointing life, and then we die. We fill up our lives with things like careers and relationships to delude ourselves that it isn't all totally pointless. We're all going to die without finding out the big answers." Part of the reason why that idea is so common is because we have no beginning. We have no story that gives us big answers. This is what happens when you don't have a beginning. And this is why we need a story that has the audacity to say, in the beginning, such and such. We need a story that tells us how everything began. We need a story that helps to give shape to our lives, that helps to explain where it all started, that tells us who is responsible for all of this. The problem is that some of us, even if you've been a Christian for a long time, have lost hope that there is a beginning, or that the beginning affects you at all. There's so much debate around creation and evolution that you just don't know what to think of it all. Or maybe you're so wrapped up in your own life that you don't even think that a beginning of the world has any relevance to you at all. The question for us this morning is, are you willing to believe in a story that claims to start from the beginning? Are you willing to buy into that? I'm not asking whether you're willing to believe in 6 days of creation or theistic evolution or any of those theories, but are you willing to believe that this story starts at the beginning and has something important and real and true to say about who began it all? The big story we need must begin at the beginning. So a story has a beginning, but as stories get started, they also have a main character. And this story is no different. As we continue reading in Genesis, we read this: "In the beginning, God." I know, I'm a bit disappointed too. If I'm honest, I'd much prefer it read, "In the beginning, Paul." Wouldn't that be nicer? I mean, it should be about me, right? When I was 10, my sister gave me a book for my birthday that was a personalized book. She had to send away mail order. And when it came, it was this book that was all about me. My name was the main character. The name of my cat was the name of the cat in the story. My neighbors were the neighbors in the story. My best friend was the best friend in this story. And if I'm honest with you, then I'd really rather a story that's kind of like that, where I'm the main character and it's about my cat and my friends and my neighbors, because that's the story that I live in. And I not so secretly believe that I'm the center of my own story. So why shouldn't I be the center of the story, right? But the Bible doesn't allow that. It starts off, in the beginning, God. There was someone else. And after I get over my initial disappointment, I'm actually grateful for a story that starts somewhere else. Because I have to acknowledge that there has to be something else besides me. Because the only other alternative is that you are all figments of my imagination. But if that were true, you wouldn't look so confused. So I have to believe that you're real and that some of you existed before I existed. And others existed before you. And others before then. So someone had to be there at the beginning. This book claims to tell the story of that someone. Think about this statement. My mother was born in Louisiana. To the best of my knowledge, that is a true statement. And it's a fairly unremarkable thing to say, given that your mother was born in Louisiana, but it's actually quite remarkable for me to say that. How do I know where she was born? I wasn't there. She was born a long time ago. She wouldn't want me to say that, but... And not only am I saying something about something that happened before I existed, I'm claiming to speak knowledge about the person who gave me my own beginning. This is an audacious claim to make, that I have knowledge like this. Tradition has it that Moses wrote these first words in the Bible. So here's Moses writing, "In the beginning, God." How dare he write that? Who is he to claim that he has real knowledge of the beginning, and not only that, but he writes of the one who was there who began it all? That's a crazy thing for him to say. No wonder the world thinks that Christians are arrogant and know-it-alls. This is an arrogant claim to make, that we have knowledge that predates us, that predates everything, about the God who created everything. Now, we're going to spend a lot of time over the next 9 months trying to get to know this God. We're going to see him do things that are awe-inspiring. We're going to see him do things that are really confusing. We're going to see beauty and pain. And we're going to find out more about this God and who he is, who was there at the beginning. All we know for now is that he was in the beginning, and we were not. But that's exactly the kind of story we need. We need a story that starts before us. We need a story that isn't about us. We need to find ourselves in the context of someone else. The American Dream might be a great story, but countries are born and countries die and countries aren't around forever. What happened before America? What will happen if there is an after America? We need stories that are bigger than the world we live in. And this is the biggest kind of story that could be. We have the opportunity to become immersed in a story that isn't about us. And I say that it's an opportunity because when we get over our initial fears, our initial desire that everything be about us, when we put that aside, we find out that it is so freeing not to be the main character. That when we can live our lives with someone else as the main character, we have this immense freedom to not believe that everything revolves around us, to not think that the audience hangs on our every word, to not think that our decisions are going to make or break everything. We can be free because there is someone else bigger than us who is there. Four words into the story, and I'm hoping that you are starting to see why this is the kind of story that we need. We need a story that begins at the beginning, and we need a story that is bigger than us. Now we get to the last few words of these opening lines. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The Bible tells a story that claims to start from the beginning, It claims to talk about someone who was there, and now it claims that that someone is responsible for everything. That someone created the heavens and the earth. Think about the scope of this claim. This God created everything we know, this earth we live on. This God created everything we want to know about, the heavens that are out there. This God created, and this story talks about our life, the things we're familiar with, and our longings, the things we want to know. Every culture has a deep connection with the place they live, with their land, whether it's the young American family buying their first home, or land that has been held by a family for centuries in other cultures. We are rooted to our land. It is our home. It is personal to us. This story is about our home. It is about a God who created the earth, the place where all of us live. After I went to India for the first time, I became a little interested in their story. And so I read a book that spoke about the partition in 1947, this life-changing event that formed the modern states of India and Pakistan and Bangladesh. And it was fascinating to me, but it wasn't my story. It wasn't personal. When I went back to India, I talked to people for whom it was personal, people whose parents and grandparents had lived through that. And they told me real stories, because that story was about their land. But this story that the Bible tells is my story. It is personal to me because it is about a God that created the place where I live, the place where everything I do happens. And that's the kind of story I need. I need a story that speaks of the things that I'm familiar with, of families, of parents, of children, of jobs, of trees and rocks and mountains and rivers. I need a story that tells me about those things that I experience every day. And this is that kind of story. But cultures also want to know about what lies beyond. And the heavens have always been a symbol of that, looking up to see something that you don't know about, to gaze into the unknown. We've always been drawn to furthering our knowledge, to finding out more about those things we want to know about. And this story is about a God who not only created the earth that we are familiar with, but he created the heavens that we long to understand. Our country just made an historic accomplishment. We launched this Mars rover into space, traveling 300 or so million miles to land on another planet in what is the most sophisticated thing that we've sent to another planet. And it's great. We are furthering our knowledge of those heavens. But Mars is actually pretty close to us. See, the closest star, I got to get my numbers right here, is 23 million million miles away. That's like traveling to Mars 80,000 times over. And that's only the closest star. The farthest star is 3 billion times farther than that. So to say that we are only scratching the surface of exploring the heavens is a great understatement. There's so much out there we don't know, but we want to know about it. This story claims to tell the story of the God who does know about it because he created it. And that's the kind of story I want too. I want a story about those things that I long for: peace and joy, happiness, forgiveness, community, majesty, glory. I need a story that speaks of those things, not just the things I know, but the things I long for. What about you? Do you need a story like that? Do you see why this story is worth considering? We need a story that has a beginning. We need a story that is bigger than us, But we need a story that speaks to us, to our condition, to what we live and to what we long for. Well, there's one last part of the story that we don't get from this verse, but it's an important part of making this story the kind of story that we need. Stories end. Some of them end well, some of them end not so well. So if this story that the Bible tells is going to be a story that we could wrap our lives around, we really ought to hope that it's a story that ends well. We ought to hope that it's a story with a future. And the truth is that we need a story with a future. Our culture, if it has lost any sense of a beginning, even more so, it has lost any sense that we are in a story that goes anywhere, that we have any future worth participating in. So without giving away all of the end of this epic story that we're starting, I want to read one verse from the end of the book, because I know that you do that too when you're deciding on whether to read a book. Revelation 21:1. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. Notice then that this story ends where it begins, only better. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and in the end, we see a new heaven and a new earth. The same thing that we've experienced, the same kind of life, but restored, made new, repaired, fixed. And I don't know about you, but I know that I need a story of restoration. I need a story that tells me about how things can be fixed. Because I know that the world I live in is a broken world. I know about the pain that others experience. I know about injustice and hurt. But I also know from my own life that I need to be restored. That I don't treat people the way I ought to treat people. That I don't do the things I want to do. That I get lonely and angry and scared and mean. And that I want a future where things are better than they are now. I need a story that goes somewhere. I need a story about restoration. This is that kind of story. It's a story about a God who doesn't just create and leave it all to happen. He creates and he stays with it. And he gets involved. And he works hard, repeatedly, relentlessly to bring about what he originally intended for his creation. And in the end, he restores it to what it was meant to be, only better. And the way that that happens is the great surprise, the great astonishment, the heart of this story. God goes directly into it. He gets involved. He gets dirty. He rolls up his sleeves, and he shows up within the story. We've heard a lot of stories of restoration lately. We've heard a lot of people saying, give me 4 years and I'll fix things. But it sounds a lot like what we heard 4 years ago, and a lot like what we heard 8 years ago and 12 years ago. We need a bigger story of restoration. We need a future that actually is worth looking forward to. This story is that kind of story. We need a story that begins at the beginning. We need a story that is bigger than us. We need a story that speaks to us, that speaks to our life and our longings. And we need a story that gives us hope, a story with a future. We need a story like the one this book tells. It's hard to grasp a story as big as the one the Bible tells. So to help us grasp it during this series, we've created these 10 eras as markers to ground us, to remind us of the whole flow of the story. Later in the service, we're going to be listening to a reading that has selected verses from different parts of those eras to help us walk through that together and grasp the whole of it. I started off this morning talking about what might be the most famous ride at Disneyland. It's a Small World. And I suggested that this ride tells a story. It's a story of people separated by their differences, separated by culture and language and ethnicity. But a story where people are brought together in unity and harmony by one simple thing, just realizing that it's a small world after all. Just realizing that there's so much that we share. So, the question is that story true? Is that all it takes to listen to that story? To realize there's so much we share? Well, as it turns out, many people estimate that this particular song is the most listened to and most translated song of all time. That never in history has a song been heard by more people and in their native language. A close runner-up is You've Lost That Loving Feeling. But that song tells a different story. So if the goal is to make everyone aware that there's so much we share, they're doing a pretty good job. So how are we doing? How close are we to that white room with children singing in harmony and peace? I'd say not very close. I'd say that realizing there's so much we share might not be enough. That the problems of the story we live in are bigger and they need a bigger solution. They need the solution that this book describes. Our culture is full of stories that are false, stories that mislead, stories that may sound plausible at first, that may give you hope for a simple solution, that may say, if you just do this, you can have control, you can get what you want, you can make it happen. But those stories fall short. Those stories disappoint, and they don't deliver. We need a story that delivers. We need a story that starts at the beginning. We need a story that's bigger than us. We need a story that speaks to us. We need a story that gives us hope. But most of all, we need a story that's true. And this story that we are embarking on discovering these 9 months is the true story. It is the one story of the one who made everything and who makes sense of everything. It is the story worth wrapping your life around. So come along with us. See what you think. Listen to this story. Find out how it affects your story. It is an epic story. It is the astonishing story of God and the world. It is the true story, and it changes everything.